Hi, I'm Dr. George Stamatopoulos, and you're listening to Reasonable and Necessary, brought to you by the Summer Foundation. Joining me on today's episode are Mark Brown and Kate DeCruz. We're going to explore the complex relationships that we have with the NDIS. What makes these relationships work? And how do they sometimes fall apart? And when they do get difficult, how do we rebuild trust? Check it out. Hi, Mark and Kate. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
You're going to talk to us about research. There's a whole research team at the Summer Foundation. What do you guys do individually?
Well, I'm a research fellow at the Summer Foundation, and I have been since about 2018. And my job varies from project to project, from crunching numbers, using administrative data, to interviewing people and doing qualitative research. So a wide range.
And Kate, yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a senior research fellow at the Summer Foundation. I have a background as an occupational therapist and found myself really interested in doing qualitative research. So my particular interest is listening to people and being curious and finding out a little bit more about their experiences. And really, I guess one of the main focus of our research is partnering with people with lived experience of disability and working together to kind of understand their experiences and hopefully then communicate those in a way that has impact, and particularly at a policy or government level.
Now, you've both been doing some really interesting research around the NDIS, and you've done the study where you've done quite in-depth interviews, right? Why did you talk to people about the NDIS, and how many people did you interview?
This project that we're currently working on, we began late last year, in the sort of still in the lead up to the election, and there was a lot of discussion at that time about the future of the NDIS. The S word was being thrown around a lot, sustainability of the NDIS, and so the project that we started was a qualitative project to look at the NDIS from the perspective of what it's like to be a participant, what it's like to be in the mind of the participant and live that experience. So we've been interviewing people one-on-one or two-on-one with a friend or family member or someone involved in their lives. And the interviews have been really interesting, in-depth conversations.
Oh, I like depth. It's good. And what have you found so far?
We've done 13 interviews. And the key thing is this idea of the relationship participants have with the NDIS and with the NDIA. It's a relationship that their life depends on because that they require reasonable and necessary supports. For the participant, making the relationship work is non-optional.
Yeah. Like if you and I, you know, after that, like, are we done with this NDIS? You know, we are dead in a few hours, really. Or maybe 3 or 4 days if I'm lucky.
Which is a bit different to some other government schemes or government services where the idea is something is provided short term and then the idea is that you won't need that anymore and goodbye, we hope not to see you again.
And look, that's what we advocated for, right? That we advocated for a lifetime scheme, something that will be there, that we can rely on, you know, these are all good things, you know, that the NDIS is there for us.
Yeah, and can I add there, George, that something I think that's really important from what we've learned is that there is this really strong goodwill, this kind of vested interest or commitment for the NDIS to be successful. So for that very reason, that this is an ongoing relationship, one that's really central to people's lives, they can't opt out of. And I think that's something that's really, that port in itself is really important, that we kind of pause and recognise that, because that really just, I think that shapes the rest of our understanding around people's experiences of the NDIS currently.
Yeah, indeed. And so what's it like, Mark, when you've got this relationship with, you know, a government, you know, bureaucracy, which, you know, I think that once you've got 500,000 people on the scheme, it's hard not to be a bureaucracy.
A takeaway for me from doing these interviews and looking through the data is how complicated the relationship is, and the mixed feelings that often came up. So on the one hand, most people we talk to would bring up on their own a range of really real benefits and important things where the NDIS has been vital for unlocking opportunities and making a range of things possible. So most people on the one hand really wanting to emphasize that to us, that the NDIS was working for them in some way, and that it's not a scheme that they would ever want to see go away. And then the other side is something that came up a lot, which was a sense of a loss of confidence or a loss of a sense of stability in the scheme and their relationship with the scheme. And so even when people talked about being able to use my funding to do this and this, and that's been a great improvement for me and my quality of life compared to before the NDIS, for a lot of people, there is this underlying fear in some cases, or apprehension, that, you know, what if the rug is pulled out from underneath them? And that's a really key thing that we plan to investigate more and talk about more in our upcoming report, which will go into things on more detail. But I suspect that this is a key issue that we need to have a conversation about in the disability community.
Yeah. And Mark, I guess one thing, and we got a sense from the people that we've spoken to so far, that what's fueling this loss of trust or confidence is experiences of really long wait times for funding, people feeling kind of vulnerable, at risk in those wait times, people in particular who don't have other kind of external family and supports. People also describing this kind of lack of feedback around the process of their funding, or trying to make contact with the NDIA and not having people that either understand their particular situation or not having the skill or knowledge in that moment to kind of understand and talk with them, because particularly people with cognitive and communication difficulties were sharing a lot of frustration with that that feedback and the nature of, so the kind of the lack of feedback and the nature of the feedback. So there were some really specific examples that participants have given us around these experiences that continue to happen that seem to be eroding this confidence and trust in the stability of the scheme to support their needs.
And you had a really nice quote around that, didn't you, around someone who had that experience?
That's right. Yeah, one of our participants said, "We rely on the NDIS, and I think that for the NDIS to recognise how much we rely on that funding, and especially for people like myself where they've got no internal support, like family and partners, we rely on that external support because we don't have a family to rely on, we don't have a partner."
Yeah, and you know that's the reality for a lot of people, and that's really I think where if the NDIS isn't working and you don't have the informal supports that it's even more critical to get that relationship working for you.
Absolutely. And people also talked about examples of where there's that gap in funding and actually then agencies continuing to provide support without funding in that time because of the vulnerability of that person in that moment. And, that's a really big ask for someone. And what was happening is people were saying they felt guilty or uncomfortable having to be a burden on an organisation that's not being funded in that moment for providing support, but they didn't have any other option, and the agencies have recognised that. So, yeah, and those who do have external support were really reflective and concerned about others who may not, so they could recognise those risks for others.
That was a really interesting thing that came up a lot in the interviews, Kate, when people would say things like, "Look, I've worked really hard and to and advocate I've advocated for myself. I've fought to be treated fairly and to get the reasonable necessary supports I need. But I'm lucky that I had the ability to do that. And if I wasn't so, like if I wasn't in a position to do that, what would happen to me?"
Yes, the self-advocacy that you need to do every day is really intense sometimes, and it is concerning that not everyone necessarily has that ability or that support or that those skills to advocate for themselves.
But it brings up the self-advocacies and advocacy skills are always great to have. But if the relationship with the NDIA was a partnership where you both had the same goals, then would you have to advocate to the NDIA to support you with reasonable, necessary funding? Or would it be a process of let's work out the funding plan together because we both have the same goals?
Yeah, and I think that goals are tricky, aren't they? Because the NDIS goal is to obviously provide the supports in accordance with the Act, and that's all open to interpretation. And often the planner that you are lucky or unlucky enough to end up with, is that something that came out?
Yeah, that particularly that idea of, look, it depends who you happen to be put in contact with on the day. That one planner might tell you one thing, but then another planner might have a different interpretation of what the rules are, what the guidelines are, and what you're entitled to.
I reckon there's a lot of fantastic, planners out there that are doing great work, right? And we need to acknowledge that. It's just that not everyone's lucky enough to land that planner, and then there's when the funding is a particular, type, like it might be SDA, then there's all the bureaucracy of getting that worked out. So it does get more complicated, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think if you go back to that, this kind of concept of being in relationship with something that we, heard from the participants was this need for consistency or someone who understands you and your needs and can kind of travel alongside with you. So they talked about this idea of having people really relied on an ally or someone who they could trust and who could provide that support. And sometimes that would be a support coordinator or a planner, but other times it might be close others or other allied health professionals. And so that became really central. I guess that was a really kind of a central theme, wasn't it, Mark, that people talked about with this idea of having an ally.
Having an ally seemed to be something that, for the people that felt like they had that, that it was a something protective or something that helped them cope with the relationship that they don't have with the NDIA. So for some people, having a support coordinator that they have a really good relationship with, or a friend or family member that that sort of works through their, helps them work through their NDIS journey, meant that the sort of the fear and uncertainty about dealing with the NDIA was a shared problem, and seemed to make it an easier process for a lot of people.
Yeah, you remind me of the Chloe and Safeguards framework that talks about developmental safeguards, and it talks about all of those relationships that we either have or don't have in our lives, and actually the basis of whether or not you have, you know, you're at risk of abuse, or whether or not you're able to be resilient in certain areas where, you know, I think that a lot of people with disability, because of the social exclusion, because of the discrimination, because of community attitudes, a lot of us don't have all those really important foundational relationships.
The level of self-knowledge and thinking about life goals, I mean, it's kind of an odd thing. I think most people would think it's an odd thing to be on the phone or having a meeting with a government agency and talking about, you know, what are your life goals for the next 5-10 years. You know, it's more like a job interview question, but I'm an NDIS participant myself, and that's always a tricky part for me to answer and think about. What are my life goals, and what makes for a good life goal, and how does what I say about my goals affect what supports will be deemed reasonable and necessary? I personally find I definitely need other people to help me think through what it is I actually want.
George, I've got a nice quote from another participant. Can I share that?
Yeah, love it.
So one of our participants, reflecting on a really similar point, said, you need to get a good support coordinator, but it's very important that you get along with your support coordinator and she or he understands your needs and what you need for your plan, because there's no point getting a support coordinator that doesn't know who you are, because it's all about supporting you as a person. That really nails what we're talking about here, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. Although, can I add on another layer of complexity to that? Support coordinators come and go, don't they? So there is that issue around when we're dependent on someone paid in our life, you know, what happens when that person leaves? Or what happens if we can't find the right support coordinator for our needs? It's complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And that contributes to that lack of stability, you know, that kind of that fear around, I might be okay for now, but I don't know in 6 months or 12 months. And that was really evident across a number of the participants.
Yeah. And my little life lesson is never rely on one person for anything. Yeah. So you talked about trust and how that was important. What are some of the things that you think need to happen to strengthen and build trust in that relationship between people with disabilities and the NDIA?
If we're right, and the this feeling that we've heard in who we have talked to is more widely shared, then rebuilding trust is going to be pretty important. And if you if you think about it as a relationship between participants and the NDIS or the NDIA, then as in any relationship where trust has been lost, it's going to take time to get that back. So even if tomorrow, every policy change to whatever you happen to think was the best thing, there can still be a lingering feeling of, okay, things are going better today, but I felt that way in the past, and then I felt let down later on. So a consistency over a period of time of things improving is probably going to be important. And the other thing I suspect is the dialogue that happens between participants and the NDIS, NDIA and government going forward. In relationship counselling, if you're going to relationship counselling, a good place to start would be both sides having an open and honest dialogue where, you know, the mistakes can be admitted to and everyone feels safe to talk through their feelings about it. Maybe something similar needs to happen between participants and the NDIS.
Well, considering that a lot of people are in court at the IOT with the NDIA, I think there'd be a bit of relationship rebuilding that might need to occur there. But that's really tough, you know. Once the trust has been broken, like you said, you gotta do some work to get it back. So ideally, Mark, what sense did you get from participants about what they want this relationship to be like? Like, what's a healthy relationship with the NDIA?
I think it probably looks different for different people, but some common elements are this sharing of goals or sharing of the ultimate purpose of the scheme. My goals of pursuing my personal goals and the NDIA's goals aren't in opposition to each other.
On that line, people talked a lot about this idea of the being understood, so actually working with people in an organisation that really gets them and their needs. So it's about kind of together problem-solving solutions and working really positively together, and perhaps less of trying to kind of fight for this understanding of I need this funding or, you know, my particular situation is this. So understanding, and I know that that's a kind of a nuanced concept, but that did come up a lot from participants. And this idea of kind of, I think, Mark, you talked about, you know, making mistakes and kind of learning together. So recognising that we haven't got it quite right now. Going back to the relationship, though, also I think it's good to remember that this idea of there was a lot of goodwill because, again, people can't opt out of the relationship. So rebuilding trust is difficult, but it's really central. People want and need this to work. So although it's hard, I think, you know, recognition of the importance and centrality of this relationship and the kind of the desire to get it right. And there's a lot more I think we can do in this space to kind of work out together some good solutions.
So less fighting and more working collaboratively, yeah?
Yeah.
Sorry.
And more open, honest dialogue. And actually, the Summer Foundation has another research endeavour which is trying to further that along a little bit.
Oh, tell us about that.
So we've got a survey out currently, and it's designed very much some very simple questions, but really focused on people having a say in kind of the future of the NDIS. So really keen to understand what's working well from people's perspective and what you would change if you could, you know, like if you had a magic wand, three things you would change to make the NDIS better. So really honing in on that understanding to kind of then propel some solution, some generation of solutions. This survey is, you can find it on our Summer Foundation website. You just scroll down a little bit and you'll see Have Your Say, and it's also on our Summer Foundation social media sites. So you'll find that on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And also they've got a question there around if people are interested in sharing their story. So that we would really love to hear from more people around their experiences to try and, get together and to kind of generate some solutions. In our study, Mark and I are also looking at going back to some participants who we've spoken to already and then also going back to some new participants to get a little bit more understanding around solutions and ideas that can contribute to a change, and hoping to run some workshops as well, which is very much designed around participants of, or NDIS participants coming up with some solutions that we can then take back at a policy level and government level to try and inform some new developments.
Sounds great. So when does the survey close? How long will it be open?
I think mid-July it'll be closed.
Mid-July 2022.
That's right. Thanks, George. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Really encouraging people to grab that opportunity because it is a really, you know, it's designed as a simple survey and it's open to anybody in Australia who's an NDIS participant.
And you know what I love about what we do at the Summer Foundation? Is that we don't just ask questions because we're interested. We actually use that information. So we have a new government and it's a new day, a new opportunity to influence. And
yeah,
why not get involved, do the survey, and we'll use that to tell the government what people want.
Absolutely.
Any final comments?
Well, just thank you so much, George, for having this conversation with us. And it's been great to talk about the research. We're really passionate about it and great to hear your thoughts and hopefully other people find it interesting.
And, yes, thanks, George, and a shout-out to our participants as well. They know who they are. We're learning so much from spending time with talking with people about their experiences and really looking forward to sharing the learnings a bit more widely and hopefully getting some really positive change.
Yeah, and thanks to both of you for coming on the show, and hopefully we'll do another one and we'll talk about what the findings were.
That'd be brilliant. Thanks, George.
All right, have a good afternoon.
Thanks so much.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
That's all we have time for on today's episode of Reasonable and Necessary. To be notified of future episodes, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and the notification bell. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay well and reasonable.